BICMO is a certified B Corp on a mission to protect all riders, their rides, and the world in which we ride. Whether you're a casual commuter or a hardcore roadie, BICMO's got your back. As a listener of I'm Not Your Soigneur, you'll be able to get discounted cover. Head on over to BICMO.com and use our special discount code NYS24 to protect your ride. Thanks again to BICMO for sponsoring the podcast.
I'm Ryan Mullen.
I'm Georgina Mullen.
I'm a professional cyclist.
And I'm not your soigneur.
I'll be talking about what it's like to be a professional cyclist.
And I'll be talking about what it's like to be married to one.
We'll be joined by friends from the cycling world as we talk about what really goes on off the bike. So please join us for honesty, a bit of chaos, and hopefully a few laughs along the way. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of I'm Not Your Soigneur. I apologize for how long it's been since I was last on this show with Georgina, but life's been pretty busy and pretty hectic. So here we are again.
Yeah, last time we recorded an episode, I had Katie Marchant, and that was nice to have.
Yeah, Georgina went behind my back and recorded one without me. No, I was very nervous.
I asked for permission, but it was nice to have Katie on. But yeah, it feels more natural to have you sat there for this podcast, I think.
Yeah, it's nice to be back, to be fair. Got a lot to get through today.
Yeah, it's been a busy few weeks. A lot has happened, hasn't it? I don't know where you want to start.
I was last on with Ed, wasn't I? When was that actually? I don't even know when that was. Was that June?
Yeah, a while ago. But it's been that busy that Ryan actually hasn't had a haircut for like 6 weeks.
No, that's why I'm wearing a hat, because you don't want to see what's going on underneath this hat today.
But maybe we start with the Olympics, because that's the biggest thing that's happened, not in the last 6 weeks, but in the last, well, in our entire relationship, I'd say.
Yeah, it was a big one to tick off the bucket list, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was probably the biggest thing that's happened this year. It took a lot of mental energy, didn't it, from you and me?
Well, should we rewind to the last Olympics and talk about how that was a potential for you?
Oh, yeah.
But why we turned that down, or you turned that down?
Yeah. So, yeah, 2021, well, 2020 Olympics in Tokyo got postponed to 2021. We were trying to get married, weren't we, that year?
Yeah.
And initially, the Olympics weren't meant to clash with that at all. But then, I can't even remember how it even went down.
We basically had to give notice to get married, because our wedding had been changed many times due to COVID regulations and race programs. You were joining Bora.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we were supposed to get married in October, weren't we?
Yeah.
In Italy, that was the plan. But then that clashed with the Bora end of season camp, which was mandatory for everyone to go to.
And it was important for you as well, because it was your first year with the team, yeah, and you were going to meet everyone.
I had to go. And I had a great time. I was glad I went in the end, to be honest. It was fun. Yeah, I couldn't miss any days of that camp because of like clothing fitting, bike fittings, meeting the team. And it wasn't even possible to miss like 2 or 3 days. I can't remember exactly the dates of when we were supposed to get married, but
our wedding was like slap bang in the middle of when this camp
right in
was
the center of it going on. And we had to move the wedding, didn't we?
Yeah.
And the only way in which that worked around the season, the 2021 season, was we had to give notice. And then it was like a 30-day period.
Yeah, because with COVID again, we changed the location. We had to change the date. We were going to get married in the UK, because we were at the point where we were like, okay, well, let's just get married however we can do it now.
Yeah.
There was a few different elements that made it really tricky, in that Ryan has an Irish passport and Ryan is a resident of Andorra and I am a British resident with
and
a British passport.
And I also wasn't allowed to leave the country for 30 days in that notice period or something.
Yeah, when you
give... it was ridiculous.
You have to be in the country for 30 days before you give notice. And there was no period of time other than the August where Ryan could be in the UK for that amount of time,
It was
basically
the most complicated thing in the world.
It was really complicated. But because of that, you were asked to apply for Ireland to go to the Olympics.
Well, I think I already had, because it wasn't meant to initially affect anything. But then with the wedding getting moved forward by 3 months,
that
clashed with the Olympics.
Yeah, so you had to.
So I basically effectively withdrew from the Olympics to get married. And yeah, I get to wear the stupid hat.
But that's why this one was even more important, because I remember back in August 2021, we literally were like, I really, really hope you can go to Paris, because you've had to turn it down.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have been gutted for you actually if you weren't able to go, but you did. And it was amazing. And it'd be good to, I guess, reflect on that experience from both sides, because we had two very different experiences for sure.
Mm.
But it did take a lot for us, didn't it, as a family to even get you on that start line.
Yeah, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of money. I was, yeah, proud to have made it to the Olympics. Like, the only thing left really now for me is the Tour de France.
Yeah.
And that's, I have effectively completed cycling in a broad sense. I haven't won much, but...
You've ticked off your key races you'd want to finish your career having done.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So Ryan went to Andorra for a good chunk of time pre-Olympics. You had a busy block of racing, but then you went to Andorra and you lived on your own there for a little bit, didn't you? Because you needed to knuckle down, focus and get some like key training in.
Mm.
And then Gino and I went out to Andorra to see Ryan, spend a bit of time with him there. But then I still wind Ryan up now. He sent me and Gino home so he could knuckle down even more and train. No, but you planned with your coach slash friend Brian to...
Yeah, Brian Nugent, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks to Brian there for your help getting you ready for the Olympics.
Yeah, massive shout out to Brian. Brian was my first proper coach. He was a coach for probably 8 years. He was the Cycling Ireland Federation head coach in Cycling Ireland for, I don't even know how long, a long time.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we still have a really, really good relationship. He knows me inside out and he knows what I need. And he's still really, really invested in my career. So he offered to come out and help. And
yeah.
I'm actually really grateful for his help because he turned the screw in my training. Yeah, effectively battered me.
Yeah. But, you know, so you did that block with Brian and then you went straight to Paris. So there was a good like 6 weeks we didn't see you basically because you'd been in Andorra and then you'd gone to the Olympics and you went straight from Andorra living in this like little athlete bubble to the Olympic Village.
Mm.
And I was really enjoying, to be honest, the videos and pictures Ryan was sending of like the behind the scenes. Like I remember with the Tokyo Olympics, everyone was talking about the cardboard beds.
Yeah. And they were comfortable.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's little things like that that you hear about.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no way. But actually seeing you on them and in that environment was really, really surreal and strange, but really cool.
Yeah.
So you did a video tour of like the room for us when you first got there.
Yes.
And you were so excited and you got the little letter from the little girl like drawing you a picture.
I remember doing that when I was in school and that was like a real surreal moment because I remember when I was a kid drawing these letters for some athletes, for an Olympian. Yeah.
Yeah.
That went full circle and then I had a kid doing it for me and I was like, that for me, that little picture now is displayed in our living room, isn't it? Because that meant quite a lot to me.
For context, it was maybe a little girl from a local, from a primary school in Ireland that was asked to create like a picture to inspire and wish Ryan good luck. And I guess every child when this primary school is maybe given an athlete that they have no idea who it is to draw a picture for, to wish good luck. But she drew like the little mascot, I think, and she said, good luck, Ryan. And that was actually a really nice touch, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was nice on like an emotional level because I remember doing that.
Yeah.
I did that. I don't remember who for.
No.
But
it's now displayed in our living room. And so Gino's at an age, our little boy, where he doesn't fully understand where Ryan's gone or what he's doing or that he's even doing the Olympics. So we tried to like do something to include him in the excitement, didn't we?
Yeah. The pictures were great, actually.
So Ryan took a little Peppa Pig figurine to Paris that Gino had left in Andorra. I think at the start, it just started out as like a piece of Gino for you.
Yeah. I mean, I was packing and then obviously I was missing you and Gino and then I knew it was still going to be like another week or 10 days before I came home.
Mm-hmm.
And just next, he left on the bedside table.
Yeah.
So I just thought, I'll bring Peppa. And then I thought, I just thought I'll bring that as a little piece of motivation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I was there, I thought, actually, Peppa can go to the Olympics now.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd make a thing out of it.
It was really funny because Brian basically said, shall I do like tour of Paris with Peppa? And I was like, yeah, really cool. He's like, do you think I'll look like a loser? I was like, yeah, but it's funny. Let's just do it anyway. And then Gino had got to the point where instead of asking to speak to Daddy on FaceTime or see where Daddy is, he'd asked to speak to Peppa. So Ryan was sending us like these pictures of like Peppa on the start ramp of the TT Recon or Peppa sat in the car on the dashboard of the TT team
Peppa
car.
Peppa with the T-Shock of Ireland.
Peppa with the T-Shock of Ireland, yeah. And then Peppa ended up making the newspaper and various different broadcast channels. And it became a thing. Like our family were like, where's Peppa today? Not like, where's Ryan?
Yeah. How's
where's Peppa?
No, everyone asks how Peppa is, but no one asks how Ryan is.
Yeah. But that was funny. And I think we were talking actually with your dad the other day, how a lot of journalists ended up picking up you with Peppa because there was a little bit of like...
lightheartedness
amongst this really
doesn't fit the script.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I felt like, you know, when you go and meet a member of parliament or someone in the government, it's all, and then you're doing like the pleasantries and then it's all quite forced. It's all for media. But then once I took out Pepper, I feel like everyone like just relaxed. And I was like, oh, this is actually fun.
Yeah.
And it was, I definitely noticed like a change of pace in the whole environment as soon as I pulled out Pepper. And then it just became a lot more real and everyone's kind of guards got let down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It could have just been me.
It's just like a bit of normalness, isn't it?
Yeah. But I was like, I was really nervous, again, asking like, I know you have kids. Would you mind if you hold this Pepper for my son? And then everyone just kind of like not cheered up, but then it definitely.
Yeah, it breaks down the barriers.
Yeah. Pepper broke the ice.
So for context, because I didn't know what a T-shock was, and it's spelt a really funny way because when you were texting me, I was like, what's a Taoiseach? But it's a T-shock, that's how you say it.
Yeah.
He's a really important member of Irish Parliament, basically, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's effectively the head of the government
in
Ireland. He's like one step below the president. He's not the president, but he's like a step below the president.
So a serious guy, though, for you to be handing Peppa Pig over to.
Very serious guy to be handing Peppa over to. But he loved it. It was great. It's funny, like you often forget like these people in power are humans.
Yeah, and they most likely have their own families and understand it.
Yeah. And then we actually had a normal conversation after that. It was nice.
Yeah.
Pepper the icebreaker.
So Brian's done like a fair few interviews after the Olympics. It's been quite busy, to be honest. I felt like for once I've actually been married to somewhat a Z-list celebrity. But
D.
yeah.
D-list,
but
give me that.
You have done a lot of interviews and I've been around for some of them, and a lot of the questions have been like, how is the athlete village? Like, have you bumped into any celebrities? And there was the story about you and you were in the dining hall bumping into Andy Murray.
Yeah, stepped on the back of Andy Murray's shoes in a queue. I was like, oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Was it just really surreal to be around people like that?
I mean, he's the only celebrity that I saw there.
Yeah.
Turns out that I found out that a lot of the big names of sport weren't actually staying in the village. They were staying outside.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, he was like that one time I just happened to be that fumbling guy that just stood on the back of his shoes in a queue. Oh, sorry, mate. And he's like, turned around, he's wearing his hat. I was like, it's Andy Murray.
But so I had seen on social media that Snoop Dogg was around.
Yeah.
So I was like, please make it your mission to just get me like, even just a signature from Snoop Dogg, but you never actually saw him, did you?
No, I heard a rumor that he was going to carry the torch through the village.
Yeah.
And then
he did, but for you at the USA area.
Yeah, but that was only on the opening ceremony. Yeah. But then there was meant to be this day where, I can't remember what day it was, the torch is going to be taken through the village and through the food hall.
Yeah.
And I assumed Snoop Dogg was doing that.
Yeah.
And I was going to try rugby tackle him to take a photo. This is Pepper, take a photo. This is the biggest, most important thing of my life right now. But then you can imagine my disappointment when it turned out to be Chris Hoy taking the village through the...
I mean, no disrespect.
No disrespect, but I mean, it wasn't Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was still cool. But yeah. I mean, I didn't rugby tackle Chris Hoy for a picture of Pepper.
No.
I remember feeling quite upset.
The other thing that was quite cool is that the athletes within the village all get given pin badges, don't you?
Yeah.
And you obviously have like your accreditation lanyard. And the idea is that you go around and swap pin badges with different countries. And in the middle of the Olympics, Ryan basically came home after his time trial event and did a bit of time at home before his road race, purely because the roads were closed in Paris, so you weren't able to do long rides in preparation for the road race.
Yeah, it was just nice to get out of that. It was very overwhelming in Paris.
Yeah.
So I remember afterwards I was completely destroyed. It was just nice to get out of that environment where you have a little bit of normality.
Because
there was a week in between, so I just wanted to came home, see Gino and then see you and then go back and like mentally reset because I'd just come out and like breathe.
Just breathe.
Yeah.
But so Ryan walked through the door and with this like suitcase of freebies. I was so excited. So the first thing I claimed was the Samsung. So every Olympian was given...
Yeah, that was a really cool touch. I think Samsung obviously sponsored the Olympics, didn't they? And then
Samsung Flip Z.
Yeah.
Every time the phone dies and you turn it back on, it says, hello, Olympian.
Does it?
Yeah, it's so cool.
Oh.
So I claimed that. But in amongst the bag of goodies was like a huge like little plastic bag of pin badges. And I said to you, oh, why is there so many pin badges? And you were like, oh, I was meant to swap them and, you know, trade them around, but I didn't have time to do it. So I was like, make sure you do it when you go back. So I was really pleased that Ryan came back with this full lanyard of all the cool badges from the different countries. He didn't get a Simone Biles one, but you got some really cool ones.
Yeah, I wasn't doing it before the time trial, but no. Then you called me a little bit. So that's a once in a lifetime. You've got to do it for Gino. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And then when I came back, when I went back to the village before the road race, I was on a mission.
Yeah.
And it became a competition between me and Ben Healy.
So
you can get the most badges.
This lanyard's now stacked with really cool badges.
I did 48 hours. I got about, 30, 40 badges.
Yeah, it's really cool. And they're all like nice little pin badges and obviously the different country flags or like different iconic things from different countries. But it reminded me of Disneyland. Did you ever go to Disneyland Paris as a kid?
Yeah.
Do you remember the lanyard in Disneyland where you'd get like the little, it was almost like Disneyland accreditation.
I haven't been to Disneyland Paris since like the year 2000.
Yeah, but so you used to go around and you used to buy badges and then swap your badges.
All right, I don't remember that. Yeah, I remember the runway mine train.
Okay.
Well, that's all I remember from Disneyland Paris.
Okay, well, clearly you didn't get as much out of it as I did. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, because you didn't bring it home, but Ben Healy brought his girlfriend Martha chocolate muffins, because it was going round on TikTok that the chocolate muffins within the athlete village were absolutely insane.
And I never had one, actually.
So I actually said to Ryan whilst he was in Paris, what's the food like within the village? Like, is it strict? Is it healthy? And you were like, yeah, at the beginning you were like, it's not great. I think it got better, didn't it?
But yeah, the first few days, I mean, I was, not to sound, I don't know what's the word here, arrogant or anything, but the food the first few days was shit.
I think the general consensus was that was the case.
But I think what happened, there wasn't enough food for the amount of people there. I remember queuing for like an hour to get French pasta. And any cyclist knows the French can't cook pasta. You just get boiled mush. It's not al dente, let's put it that way. And
how I cook pasta, basically.
Yeah, you like the French pasta, don't you?
I do.
I couldn't get carbs, couldn't get protein. The first few days was a challenge to get the right food you needed to perform or to train in the days before the event.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't just me that thought that clearly, because I think a lot of nutritionists from different countries complained.
Yeah.
And then after I did the time trial and then I came back and then there seemed to be like triple the amount of food when I came back.
Yeah.
And you could actually eat then. But I remember the queues were like some apocalyptic Ryanair queue to get pasta. It was ridiculous.
I think, though, the thing is, it's actually really hard to judge and gauge how much food you need to make or something like that. And they'll also have been cautious of one cost and two wastage.
The thing is, there was a big thing around sustainability at this Paris Olympics.
Yeah.
But then when you take a step back, you think there's nothing sustainable about the Olympics. That's why it's every 4 years anyway.
Well, they're making steps, though, with like the cardboard beds and things to be more sustainable.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not the time and a place to like starve athletes. Is it?
Yeah. I think
with the Olympic Games, like when you try and do anything sustainable, things you kind of cut corners here and there to cut wastage, but then it's not really the time and the place, in my opinion. But you know, fair enough, each their own.
We've kind of touched on it from what it was like for you. It was quite a pressured environment, wasn't it? It was quite serious. You did enjoy it, would you say?
Yeah. 100%. It was, I mean, I did the European Youth Olympics in 2009. That was actually the first time I represented Ireland. I was 14, maybe 13, 14. They were in Finland. And I remember when I got to the village, it was like, I was like a little kid, actually. It's like, oh, I'm at the Olympics. This is so cool. It's like being in high school. It's like being in a boarding school, but for athletes.
Yeah.
I remember having flashbacks. So when I rode in the European Youth Olympics in 2009, and this was just on like a more massive scale. Mm.
But it was weird for me and Gino at home whilst you were in that bubble, because we obviously were speaking to you constantly anyway over WhatsApp and you FaceTimed us, and you were on your own because Ben was obviously coming out for the road race, so we had more time than usual at races to FaceTime. But it was really like surreal to be watching the Olympics on TV and to know that your husband's in that village. And like, obviously around the Olympics, TikTok's going wild with all athletes doing like different videos, and social media's wild of like behind the scenes village pictures and things. But it was really strange actually to know that you were there. And it was almost like I didn't really piece that together until I came out to Paris and watched you at the road race.
Yeah.
And that was the most surreal experience. And touch wood, you have a long career ahead of you, but if you never raced again, for me, that was like, okay, I've watched the best race I could possibly watch. Like watching you set off and finish in front of the Eiffel Tower. And when I say in front, like you couldn't have finished any closer.
At the feet of the Eiffel Tower. It was very cool, wasn't it, to be fair?
But
it was very, very cool.
What was crazy, and I get it because it's the Olympics, and obviously working at British Cycling previously during an Olympic Games, I get how tight is on security. But at normal race, we'd come to the race and we'd see you before the race and after the race, and we'd be able to give you a hug and a kiss and, you know, say good luck and say well done. And that is what you kind of cling to when you go to the race, those like small moments, because you've not seen each other properly for so long. But the Olympics is so strict, isn't it? Like you can't get anywhere near it, and the only way I could actually see you is if you left the village and came out to me, which you're not going to do before a race.
Yeah.
So we got a ticket through like the federation, and it was one ticket per athlete, which was actually crazy because the stadium, if you remember it, of where the road race started and finished was empty.
Yeah, it was completely empty, yeah.
And it was, we were all kind of sat there like, it's crazy we've all been given one ticket. But look at the stadium. They could have packed this out, or they could have given it to like local schools or local clubs or whatever. So that was one thing where we were like, this is mad that families have been turned away, yet the stadium's empty. But basically we got this ticket and it was for the grandstand, and we could just sit in almost what felt like a football stadium. There's big screens everywhere so you could watch the full race, and you could leave the stadium to go and watch the race on the course and come back to your seat. But there was an area within the, effectively, it was like hospitality. There was an area within the hospitality that was cordoned off for family, and it was for paying ticket holders only. And these paying ticket holders were just like, obviously, cycling fans that had bought tickets as soon as they were available. But there was a barrier in which there was a security guard, and the security guard was like, what ticket have you got? I've got a family ticket. Can I go through there? Because through there, where the purchasing ticket holders could go, was the presentation area. So we could have effectively seen you there, and you could have come over to the barrier and give us a hug and a kiss. And it was like, nope, you've just been given a free ticket, so you go and sit in the grandstand. Which is wild to me, because if you're a family member and you've flown out for this really special moment of watching your husband race the Paris Olympics, you at least want to get close enough to be able to see it's him.
Yeah.
Whereas,
it wasn't even close. I remember shouting up at the grandstand.
No, we were directed to the grandstand, and yeah, we were actually told at one point, if you leave your seat within the grandstand to go and watch the race, you won't get back in for the finish, which we were like, we can't sit here for 6 hours. That was a long race. Like, we can't sit here.
It's like almost 7 hours.
Yeah,
6 hours,
I don't
40,
even have a drink.
Yeah.
So that was mad. It was like, oh, come on. Like, just let the family members go down and see the presentation. Like, we've flown here for this. But they didn't. So we were in the grandstand. So Ryan was messaging me like, where are you? I'll come and say hello if you can. I was like, well, no chance. I'm literally sat on block Z in the stadium. But bless you, you rode up, and that was really special. You rode up and I was able to wave, and I said to
wave from a distance.
Yeah, but I said to the security guard, like, can I come down and just wave? And she was like, yep, but don't go past that point. So I was with a few of the other wives and girlfriends during the race. I was with Ben Healy's girlfriend, and we're obviously cheering for Ryan and Ben riding for the same team at that race. We were like hatching a little plan of like, how can we get as close as possible to them after the race? And I was like, girls, there's literally no chance. Look at the security guards. They're already like psyching themselves up for the battle at the finish. And there's like TV presenters, and like everyone's piling in at the finish. And it went from being like an empty grandstand in the morning to being like elbows out, girls, come on. And Bethany, Tom Pidcock's girlfriend, was like, I reckon we just do it. Like, I reckon we just go down and we just say, like, we want to see them. We're here. So I was like,
I mean, Tom will pay our bail.
Yeah. I mean, okay, then, like, we'll try. But I don't think we're going to get anywhere. Anyway, we go down, and then this one French fan was shouting at us like, we have been stood here all day. You can't push in front of us. And again, I've spoke about it before in this podcast. You go into this weird, like, fight mode where you're like, you're not going to stop me seeing him. Like, I've flown here. I have as much right to be at this barrier as you do. And your husband's not even racing. You've just purchased a ticket.
Yeah.
So this security guard was really, really nice to us. And basically Remco won the race and finished. And he thought Remco was Bethany's husband, because we were like, it's Tom Pidcock's wife. the security guard understood it as like, it's Remco's wife. So he was like, oh, okay, come down. So he let us down to the bottom of the steps. Then the second security guard stopped us there. But imagine like a full stand of people that have been like battling with us to get to the front. We've managed to sneak down. So there was me, Martha and Bethany, a few of the other girls had been stopped. And we're looking around in disbelief like, how did we just do that? And then Tom came over and Ben came over and the security guard let Bethany and Tom in. And then a really nice Irish photographer came over and I was like, can you help me get in? He was like, yeah, yeah, just come down. So then all of a sudden, there's us three stood in touching distance of you guys at the Olympics. And we're like, how have we just done that? How have we just talked ourselves to the barrier? Anyway, it was amazing because then when they all finished, we could get pictures together. And again, you had that backdrop of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And then the girls videoed you coming into the finish because Ryan had obviously done his role in the race and absolutely smashed himself up and then just finished with Michael Morkov, like quite a bit behind. But I was waiting for you and the girls were filming it and then you rode in and we got that video, which we'll have forever, of you finishing under the Eiffel Tower. So it was really surreal and it was really special. And I was so proud of you. And my Instagram content for like weeks after was just me and you under the Eiffel Tower. So I absolutely sickened everyone, but it was so special. And then coming home and, you know, my mum and dad watched it with Gino. So Gino, well, he didn't have a clue, but he kind of understood that you'd been on TV. It was just amazing. But one thing I did want to touch on was like, you have this moment that's really special and it's a massive deal for you to be at the Olympics. No one realizes how hard it is to just even get to the start line of an Olympics, right? You get the questions.
Well, you mean all the paperwork you got to fill out?
Yeah, the admin.
The admin side.
Oh, the cost, like you said. But general people that don't, I guess, follow sport as intently don't quite understand that it's hard work to get there. So winning a medal is extremely hard work that not everyone can do because there's only 3 medals per race. The questions we had, and I don't know whether you were the same, but I have so many different scenarios I could tell you of like, so did he win? I'm like, do you know how hard it is to race that race? 6 hours of racing. Do you know how hard it was to do what Ryan did? No, he didn't win. But that doesn't make it any less amazing that he didn't win.
Even in the airport when I was going to the Olympics coming back from the time trial and going out to the road race and going back from the road race.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, I think everyone knew. If I go to a normal race, I'm wearing Red Bull, Bora Hansgrohe clothing. No one looks twice.
No.
But then if you're in like a Olympic country tracksuit on the way to or from the Olympics, you get people look at you, people like heads turn, people point.
Yeah.
It's completely different because everyone knows the Olympics going on. And then
the kit had like a big green Olympic rings on those. So you couldn't miss it.
Olympic rings and an island on the front or the back. Everyone knew you were an Olympian.
Yeah.
And that term Olympian was something I never actually really thought about. But then someone said, are you an Olympian? I was like, I suppose I am, yeah.
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 But then the next question to follow is, did you win a medal?
Yeah, it's like, no,
oh
I didn't.
Oh my God. It's like the world just...
So you're on a high and you go straight back down to earth. No, I didn't win.
What is clear is Britain, the Great Britain, has been spoiled in terms of how many medals it's won. And the consensus within the public is that it's just, you know, if you go to the Olympics, you're going to win a medal. It's so hard. Like, how many people were in that road race? It wasn't as many as like a standard.
No, it was quite a small field, to be honest. I think there was 90.
But it's the best
over 90.
In the world. 90 best in the world. So like, I mean, I couldn't have even done 5K keeping up with that group on the bike of that race.
But the neutral.
But I couldn't have even stuck in at the neutral. I'd have been hanging out the back. But I went to get my nails done and I told the girls before I went to the Olympics. Oh, these are my Olympic nails. Going to watch my husband at the Olympics. Honestly, the questions I got in the salon when I came back was like, did he win a gold medal? No, he didn't. Oh, that's a shame. You're like, oh my God. Like, you're almost thinking less of it because he didn't win a gold medal, which is wild.
Yeah, you stick to painting nails, Eleanor.
Yeah. But what was really nice was everyone got behind Ryan, like everyone we know. And we have a group chat of our like estate and they created like a thread about Ryan at the Olympics. Our next door neighbour, Liz, is Irish. She's like a diehard Ryan Mullen fan. It was so nice to see the support from people like that, that genuinely just are watching and supporting and in awe of what you do. I was like screenshotting the chat for you, Sean, in the chat with the neighbours.
Thing is, I'm not even on the group chat actually.
No.
But I missed it all. I think there was a lot of people quite invested in it because even during the admin stage of going to the Olympics with all the paperwork, we, for some reason, we haven't got a printer. Georgina's never let me buy a printer. Oh, we don't need it. It's too big. It'll take up too much space. And the amount of things I need a printer for is unbelievable. Yeah. We had the embarrassment of going into the group chat. Someone, can we borrow a printer? Ryan's got a printer off his application form for the Olympics. So I think everyone was actually quite invested. Yeah. Everyone on the estate was quite invested in this Olympic journey.
Yeah, they just couldn't get their head around the fact you were racing for Ireland, though.
That's always a funny one to explain, isn't it?
What is really funny, though, so we had this amazing weekend in Paris watching you race. We obviously didn't have Gino because I just thought it was too much for him to take him out to an Olympics with the crowds. And to be honest, I'm really glad I did because it was so hot as well that it would have been really stressful. We had this baby-free weekend. It was our anniversary. We went for dinner at L'Avenue, which was recommended to me, but it was like a restaurant on Emily in Paris. So I was like, yeah, we have to go there. Before Ryan and I both flew back, because Ryan flew back to Andorra after the Olympics and I flew back to the UK, we were like, should we just grab some like lunch together before, obviously, like I said, anniversary weekend. I'm like, what do you fancy for lunch? Thinking Ryan might be like, oh, let's go and have like steak and frites because we're in France. We go to the McDonald's
the
on
day
the Champs-Élysées.
It was the day after the road race, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I had like a 7,000 calorie day the day before.
So we're sat,
I was destroyed.
Sat on one of the most iconic streets in Paris with the Arc de Triomphe just literally up from us in McDonald's.
Yeah, but I mean, you enjoyed it, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, so what's the issue?
It's the most special McDonald's I've ever had.
It was great. I just needed some salt. I was just tired. Every single muscle in my body hurt.
But it was funny because Ryan was in Olympic kit, so there were still people asking for pictures. Yeah, so we couldn't even enjoy the Big Mac.
Wiping the Big Mac sauce off my mouth to take a photo with a guy next to me. Are you an Olympian? Can we have a photo? It's like, yeah, I'm sorry you have to see me this way.
Yeah. But I think, you know, what an experience for us both. And I'm really glad I came out to watch you there. And I'm so glad that you were able to race that.
Yeah, it was special. It was all around special.
Yeah. And then straight after the Olympics, everyone was like, will Ryan get a break now? Will you get a bit of time together? Will you go on holiday? And like, no, he's literally racing again in a couple of days' time.
Yeah, Tour of Poland was up next, wasn't it?
Oh, didn't you do some races in Belgium first?
No, I did one from the Olympics. Went back to Andorra, didn't I? And I think the combination of me going back to Andorra and hitting the altitude.
Screwed
tired,
you over.
I was a zombie.
Yeah.
A zombie for like 6 days. I was so tired. But then I spoke to a few people because I was actually a bit worried. Yeah. I was like, have I got COVID?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I was so...
Because COVID was soaring around the Olympic
Village,
wasn't it?
I was so leveled for that road race. But then I spoke to Brian, actually said, it's like, it's quite normal because you have like an Olympic hangover almost. Like you have like, your body comes down. There's a lot of internal stress that you probably don't realize and then it's done. And then your body just like, sleep.
You're also just on though 24/7 because even when you're not racing, you're talking about it and you're planning it, doing the interviews and there's a lot. So next up was Tour of Poland and that was like the next thing I wanted to talk about with you because pre-going into that race, you had a call with one of your DSs and the DS was like, there's going to be no... So hold on, rewind. The Olympic road race, there's no race radios, is there? There's never a race radio at the World Championships or the Olympics. And there was so much chat on social media around that road race of, look how much more exciting the racing is without a radio. And there was obviously the situation of Remco having a mechanical and he didn't have a radio for them to tell him how much he was ahead and going to win the race. So he was like mad panic. Everyone was saying, look how much more enjoyable and entertaining cycling is to watch without radios. So then you going into Poland being told there's no race radios, for me...
On a few days. Some days, I think
there was reduced
two people
amount,
had
right?
it. Some days everyone had radios. Some days there was no radios.
Yeah. But you got the call from the DS before, so we were chatting about it. And I was like, have they done that from a... entertainment perspective? Like, is that why that was?
Allegedly, it was for safety.
Yeah.
And I understand the logic.
I don't know how it's more safe.
But no, because basically, in a World Tour race, everybody knows where they need to be at any given time.
Yeah.
Like, kilometer 67, everybody needs to be in the front. So this is what the DS and the race will say to us. Because 3Ks later, you have this point, which is dangerous and it's narrow, or you have a steep climb coming, or a crosswind section, you need to be in the front at kilometer 67, for example. But what that does, every single DS will be telling their team the same information. So what you get is like not a mad rush, but everyone's trying to be in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's not enough road for that. and there's not necessarily enough skill in the peloton for everyone to do that.
Yeah.
So that, and then there's crashes. That was the UCI's reasoning for doing this or making this call. But
so that was a UCI decision. It wasn't a race decision.
UCI just pulls the strings of everything. So it's not really the race's decision. Okay. I think it's, I don't know. I just ride a bike. I'm just a performer monkey in this circus. So, I mean, the riders just do what we're told.
Just before you go into what it was like, right? Just for context, a race radio is basically like an earpiece you wear for communication with the DS.
You wear like a little walkie-talkie and it goes in your back. There's a little pocket in the back of the suit, wired up in one ear. Then you have constant communication with the team car. You push a button, you talk, and they just speak. They speak to us and we all hear the same thing.
Yeah.
On the team. Not all the riders don't know what we're being told, but like everyone in our team can hear what the DS is saying. But yeah, they tried it in Poland and I don't think it's my personal opinion is it's not wise because on the one day that they tried this no radios or two people had the radios, there was a breakaway and we go on like Poland, Tour of Poland's notorious for like twisty, narrow roads, steep climbs, and steep descents. There was a breakaway. Actually, even on this day, at the start, there was a crash in the neutral and it happened to be, I think it was the yellow jersey or second on GC. Or maybe, I can't remember if it was the yellow jersey or not. They crashed in the neutral and then the kilometer zero came where the race starts, so the car disappears, but the car didn't leave. And we're like, what's going on here? Have we passed kilometer zero? Couldn't ask the radio. I mean, the amount of times I, by habit, went to grab the radio, I was like, oh,
it's not there.
What's going on? And then all of a sudden, the race just stopped. They stopped in the middle of the road. They just stopped. And we were like, what's going on here? And I said, oh, apparently this guy crashed. I was like, oh, right, okay. Yeah, we just didn't have that information. We didn't know. So that was strike one. We didn't know what was going on. And then getting towards the pointy part of the race, maybe like 50, 60 Ks to go, a guy in the breakaway crashed the guy quite badly, I think.
Yeah, he was lay at the side of the road for ages.
And we didn't know. But then on the same corner, when we came, Jordy, my teammate, crashed behind me on the same corner. Happened to be the same corner.
Yeah.
It just got really tight. It was dusty. Apparently, the radio tour of the race, radio to all the team cars, directors, please inform your riders of a dangerous, slippery corner on this ascent. And then RDS was like, yeah, fucking how?
Yeah.
So that's, again, another reason why we should just have radios, because that could have been avoided.
Yeah.
I mean, the poor guy in the breakaway probably didn't stand a chance. But I mean, if there was a slippery, if there was oil on the descent, we could have been informed. And then you just approach this particular corner with a bit more caution.
Yeah.
So maybe he could have actually avoided the crash. But whether or not the radio tour advised the team cars of this, I don't know. The funny thing was, on the day of limited radios, please inform all your riders of a crash in the breakaway on a slippery corner. And everyone's just like, yeah, how are we going to do that?
Yeah, this is why we needed the radio.
Yeah.
You always take like a little bit of a road captaincy role, don't you? Where you kind of help organise...
More and more, yeah.
...the team and what they're going to do in the race. Did you have to just be a lot more organised pre-race?
Yeah, I think just looking at VeloViewer, looking at the road book and combining information and then just making a mental note of where I need to be in the front or where... But that's the thing as well. I mean, you can't always stay in a team in a bubble in the race. You can't like go and get people and hey, you come over here.
Yeah, that was my next question. So are you able to ride over and be like, this is what we're going to do?
Not really, but we just kind of had to like go in with a plan beforehand and say, I have 50 Ks to go. Let's bubble up and meet.
Yeah.
Always get each other together. You kind of have to like pre-agree the plan rather than making the plan on the road.
Also, how do you know you 50 Ks to go? Is that because you've got it on your bike computer?
You have a computer. You know what's coming because we still have the GPX file of the race.
Yeah.
Still know where we are.
Yeah.
But it just made it, it just added a more challenging aspect. Like you just need to do your more homework before the race rather than relying on the director.
Yeah.
Just a bit more old school, I suppose. But yeah, just...
Did it make the race more stressful or more enjoyable? Or
didn't change anything.
No?
The only thing it did was make it more dangerous because we didn't actually know about this slippery corner situation.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah. We need radios.
And is there any plans to do that more?
I hope not. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, the UCI is the UCI.
There is a funny story which I want to touch on where when you were racing with Sam Bennett, Sam would ask for things over the radio.
Oh, yeah, it's funny.
And you do
the only annoying thing with radios is sometimes like it's you have a signal like on a phone.
Yeah.
And if you're in like a woody situation or like mountainous terrain, sometimes the signal is not great or it's a bit crackly and then obviously combined, you have 60 k's an hour wind on your chest where the radio's sitting.
Yeah.
So then you're trying to speak down, your heart rate's 180, you're like screaming, and like probably, and then it's, there's not really English. English is a spoken language in the peloton, to be honest. But you're, when you, Europeans are then listening to, where English isn't their first language, they're listening to a load of one, maybe a, for, in Sam Bennett's case, a thick Irish accent. And I was the only guy who could really properly converse with him. But I I remember stage one of the Dauphiné last year, we were about, I was riding on the front and Sam was in the peloton. I could see this wall of rain coming.
Yeah.
And then you can see like all lots of different riders going back from different teams to go and get rain jackets out because we were about to hit like a monsoon. And everyone was like, say on the radio, go back and get gloves or vest or jacket or rain jacket. And I didn't take anything because I was hot anyway. I was riding on the front. I didn't ask for anything. I still laugh about, I can't not laugh. But Sam went in the radio, Bernie, I need my sleeveless gilet. And I was like, I was there thinking, a gilet is sleeveless. Like, what are you talking about? And it's like, and he's like, can you repeat that? It's like, sleeveless gilet. And then Bernie goes, all right, Roger, that mate, gloves. Sam got gloves. I was like, oh, I was literally riding on the front of the peloton, pissing myself laughing.
It's just funny how random that what Bernie made out, but yeah.
Oh, it was so funny.
It's funny because when you come back from races, I've said this to you before, you always speak slightly differently until you've settled again. You almost reconstruct your sentences in a way that are easier to understand for European riders. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's key words that you'll say like super good or super nice. You come home and you speak differently for a little bit until you've got back into like, okay.
Yeah.
And back around people that speak the same first language.
Yeah, I think it's just a habit. I mean, you just simplify what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you think I'm quite blunt in the real world.
Yeah, you're
always scared if I'm meeting someone, you don't be blunt. Don't be not be nice.
I always tell Ryan to be polite before we meet people.
Be polite. Don't swear. It's just there. It takes, you've got to like relearn how to speak normally when I come back from a race.
Yeah.
You can't swear as much in the real world.
No, you can't. That leads us on actually. Just like, we've had a busy few weeks with Gino as well, haven't we? Like, he's not been very well and that's added a level of stress, but talking about swearing in the real world and separating the professional cycling world to normal world, we had a scenario where Gino, or a few scenarios where Gino has been bitten at nursery.
Oh yeah.
And so Ryan, being the protective dad he is, you hate to hear that kind of thing, like absolutely despise it. You get super worried whenever you get really worried whenever we get a call from the nursery or whenever we get a message from the nursery. And there was this occasion where we went to pick Gino up and the nursery teacher collared us before we collected Gino. And she said, oh, I've got something to tell you. And he'd been bitten a few times already. So Ryan and I had our backs up a little bit about why it was always Gino being bitten. They obviously can't tell you
who it is.
For who it is, obviously, for security, but on safeguarding. But Gino has kind of told us who it is. And it's kind of always the same person. So we go to collect him from nursery and the nursery teacher pulls me aside. Ryan's like lagging behind a little bit. And she goes, oh, Ryan's here as well. She knows that Ryan's like the overprotective parent that flies off the handle at things like this. She says, Gino's been bitten again. And she knows already, like it's happened four times already. A fifth bite is like too much. And she's like, I'm really sorry about it. This is how we've handled it. And we're like, it's fine. Or I'm like, it's fine. And then Ryan, full lead out mode. How did you react?
Politely.
But put it this way, she asked us to step inside the nursery because Ryan had like, rightly so, or not rightly so, sworn and got a little bit angry.
Don't pay 800 quid a month for our son to get bitten.
Yeah. But it's funny because normal scenario is that, you know, you take that and you're like, it's not ideal and okay, this is how we'll manage it and this is how we feel about it. But you were fully just in athlete mode at that point.
Maybe I'm just not very disconnected from the real world. But
yeah,
I mean, he doesn't need to go there. We just do this because we want him to socialize. I don't pay for him to go and come back. Like every couple of days is an incident report. And if we look after him, there's no incidents.
There is. Yeah, I just don't tell you about them.
For example, if I'm looking after him, there's no incidents. But then I'm paying someone else to look after him. There's incidents and he's got little baby Hannibal Lecter biting him every 5 minutes. It's like, it's not hard to like whatever this kid is, just put him in a cage in the corner of the room and keep him away from other kids.
I just think that,
it's
like,
not hard.
The way you will deal with scenarios within a race is very different with how you deal with scenarios in the real world. Like, let's be honest, if a scenario like that happened in the peloton, you just...
Well, I got bitten. Someone bit me.
I bet that's happened.
I don't think people bite in the peloton.
I bet it's happened. But you just deal with things differently within a race scenario as you do with a normal world. And I definitely think there's an adjustment period for you when you come home after a race.
Yeah, there is, yeah. 100%, yeah. So you can't shout in the real world like you shout in a bike race.
You know, it's part of going to nursery, it's part of growing up, it's part of learning. Maybe at one point I was biting children. Don't remember it. Maybe I was.
No, but he is all right now.
He's fine.
He wasn't even
He's
marked.
Quite proud of his little war wounds as well.
No, he didn't bleed. There was no chunks taken out of him.
It's just hard for a parent, isn't it, to hear that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not nice, yeah.
But yeah, he's absolutely fine. But we did lots of FaceTime whilst you were away at your last block of races, and it cracks me up because Gino's like got his favourite teammates that Ryan roommates with. So he loves Danny.
Love Danny, love Sam.
Yeah, but it was funny actually, on one of the last FaceTime calls we did when you were rooming with Sam, how you were like, Gino, do you want to say hello to Sam?
And Uncle he'd be Sam.
Like, no, Danny.
No, Danny wants to say hi to Danny.
Upset Sam. Daddy's not rooming with Danny. He's rooming with Sam. No, Danny. was there part of you that was like, oh.
No, I mean.
Sam took it well.
Sam takes it well, yeah. But I mean, I think Danny does as well. I mean, I think I always feel a bit worried that I'm pissing my roommates off if I'm on FaceTime. I mean, I'm not really someone who like, I don't even like talking on the phone if someone's in the other room, in the same room as me, so never mind being on FaceTime.
Yeah.
But like I think the guys humour it a little bit, so that's nice at least.
Yeah. And I think it's quite cute that Gino likes them and asks for them, and he'll do this thing where he'll either show his little broken nail or he'll bring like a car to show them, won't he? Like anything he's proud of.
A little peace offering. Hey, look at my red tractor.
He won't speak to them though. He'll just go, Sam, Sam. And then you'll be like, okay, say hello to Sam. And he'll just go mute all of a sudden and just hold something up to the camera, won't he? Yeah. It's really awkward.
So yeah, you're going to shy now, little fella.
But then you go, okay, then we're going to go now. And he's like, no, no more, Sam.
Yeah. No, that's good.
No, it's nice. So I actually went to watch the Tour of Britain in work capacity yesterday. And I asked Ryan before if he wanted to join me, and to which his reply was, never ask me again to watch a race that I don't have to be at.
Yeah, when I'm home, I'm home.
Yeah.
I like to disconnect. I mean, that's how I switch off. I don't watch, I mean, I watch the occasional bike race, but I don't want to go and drive an hour to go and watch a bike race, then drive an hour back. That's just not a good use of my time.
No, but we had someone message on Instagram recently to say, Ryan's talked about on the podcast how he doesn't actually really enjoy watching bike races.
I mean, to be honest, if my team was there, that's the thing, Bora aren't even at this race.
No.
If they were, it might be a different story.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want a hand with bottles today? Do you want an extra bottle point? If Bora were there and I wasn't at it and I had time, I had a day off, for example.
Yeah, yeah. You did have a big ride.
100% I'd do it, but I don't want to go and watch a race for fun.
No, but it got me thinking because this one particular person that message was saying, you know, I've followed cycling for however many years. I have particular riders that I follow and support. I travel miles. I go to some of the furthest away World Tour races. I go to my local ones. It's really helped me with a lot. This person said, I don't understand how Ryan doesn't like love to watch it. But I think there's just an element of like when you're doing it for your job. It's not necessarily a hobby anymore, is it? Like you don't.
I mean, if my team were at the race, it'd be a different story. Mm. I go cheer on the boys. Yeah, I just, when I'm home, I'm home.
But people travel, say, around the Tour de France. They live in camper vans and travel around.
Yeah.
It's just
different when you're in it and it's your job.
Yeah.
And also within my role, it's very, very, very mental. Like you have to be very switched on. You have to like, you're always thinking, you're always analysing and you're always making calls. And then also with the road caps around my day, like I'm never not thinking.
Yeah.
So when I come back from a race, I'm like, just leave that over there. I'm going to watch Netflix.
Yeah. And there's always this like we always bicker a little bit because when Ryan comes home from a race, I don't really ask him about the race. And when he's away, the chat is more just putting Gino on FaceTime and like keeping it quite lighthearted for you. But when you come home, I like to debrief on things and you're at that point done with talking about cycling.
Yeah, once I get off the plane, I'm like the cycling brain is off.
Yeah.
No, put the training brain back on.
Yeah.
The dad brain.
But then if I ask questions, you're just like, whoa, I'm done with the cycling chat.
Yeah, less of that.
But I was joking to Ryan on the way over to record today because my topic of conversations that I'm allowed to talk about is narrowing and narrowing. Like I said, we're just going to have to talk about trees and the weather.
Pretty much, yeah.
Everything I speak about at the moment, you're just like, I'm not talking about that. I'm not at a race. I'm not going to get involved in that conversation.
I just like to switch off. I mean, everyone's different, aren't they? I just like to decompress from it.
No, I get it. It's just hard when I work in the endurance industry and need help on things.
Fair enough.
So next couple of weeks, because we've had like the busiest stint of the season, haven't we? And we're almost like countdown to off season.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Well, 1 month today is the last race of the season. And it's a career then, season. Yeah, I've got a few one-day races coming up in Belgium and then Tour of Croatia, which is actually a race I've never done before. There's not many races that I left that are like my first time doing. So, I'm quite excited to do Tour of Croatia.
Yeah, there's some real nice places in Croatia. I've already been like eyeing up a little trip.
It's a no. We're going to Dubai a week after that, so you're not going anywhere.
One thing that was left in the calendar back end of the season was the World Championships and like going off the back of the Olympics. You obviously got an amazing result finishing 12th at the Olympics, but you were a bit disheartened, should we say. You didn't finish top 10 because that was the goal. We kind of walked away from that and said, let's just go all in for Worlds. Let's see how well you can do at Worlds. So we've kind of like geared the last few weeks of thinking to, you know, get Ryan to Worlds and see how well he does. And that was in Switzerland. So I was really looking forward to a trip there. But that's changed, hasn't it, in the last week?
Yeah, the team have asked me if I'd race in the one-day race in Belgium. And ultimately, I had to make a decision. Like, what am I going to Worlds to achieve?
Yeah.
Like, I've been fifth, I've been top five in the Worlds. And me going to Worlds to try and scrape a top 10, as nice as that is for me, that motivates me.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not a win, it's not a medal. But like it was...
Eleanor from the nail salon wouldn't be impressed.
No, she wouldn't. But she can stick to her acrylics. I don't care what Eleanor thinks. Yeah, I mean, going for a top 10 was like, it's motivation for me to do that nasty bit of training, which can, especially in like September, when you get septemberitis as a cyclist.
Yeah.
It just helps the days go by. You're doing a bit of like focus work for a little goal at the very end of the season. But no, the team asked me if I'd race in Belgium. And ultimately, at the end of the day, now I'm racing in Belgium, I'm not doing Worlds, and it wasn't
really a hard decision, was it?
It wasn't overly a hard decision because I mean I had to do is remove myself from the situation and look at it. What if I go and get 10th or I go and get 11th or I go and get 9th, is that gonna change anything for me? And it's a no. The answer is no. Whereas if I go to Belgium and I race with I want to race with Danny and I want to race with Jordy, and unfortunately I'm quite good at racing in Belgium. I don't love Belgium as a place.
No.
Yeah, the racing there suits my our style of racing. So, if I go to Belgium and I help Danny or Jordy win races, is that better for me? Yeah, of course it is. So I just make an educated decision. Like maybe put what I want to do away because I mean, yeah, I just have to like look at the bigger picture. What's more important for me?
Yeah,
and that was like racing with Danny and Jordy and the rest of the team in Belgium.
And it's really coincidental that Worlds and these new races are on my birthday. You always miss my birthday.
Yeah, it's all your birthday just coincides with Worlds Week.
Yeah.
And my dad's actually.
Being married to a professional cyclist though, and probably being married to any athlete, you almost just accept that Ryan will probably be riding on Christmas Day and Ryan will probably be away on your birthday and you may or may not get an annual holiday or he may or may not be here when your child's due to be born. It's just like one thing you have to accept, isn't it? And I'm almost at the point now where like my birthday just ends up being whichever day you are home because...
Yeah, well, you get birthday week. You don't have birthday, you have birth week.
Yeah, I like Georgina's
a little princess. You actually, there's no such thing as a birthday. It's like a whole week of celebrating. It's like a Lent.
I just get really excited by birthdays. Just the whole idea of like cakes and candles and happiness.
The moon pig cards.
Ryan turned 30 actually whilst...
After the Olympics.
Right?
I was sat on my own in Andorra.
Yeah, and I was really excited
with my post-Olympic hangover. Not alcohol-induced hangover, just to be clear, but just like the decompression hangover.
And the idea
I just couldn't move. I just watched Netflix all day. I was like, if this is 30, I don't want to make it to 40.
Yeah, we joke though, because you just basically said on that day, I feel 30, which is just such a mental thing.
And I felt 30. It was like, my body hurts. I have a headache and there's no reason for any of this because the Olympics was 4 days ago.
Yeah.
I was just like trying to train, but like failing to do so. I couldn't train. I couldn't hurt my body. I couldn't like do anything that my head said no to.
Yeah.
I was just like, completely blown out.
You were just blaming the Olympic tiredness on being 30.
Yeah, it was weird though. I was like, oh my God, I've never been so flat for a week.
Yeah.
And I went to Poland after that. I was like, okay, well, clearly all I needed was a bit of another race environment to like kick the head back into gear. But yeah. I was worried before Poland.
You've also just had a really busy year. Like there's not been a period, I feel, where there's been like a down. I think days off this year, you've maybe had like three. Where you've been totally off, like during the season?
I have days off quite often.
No, not rest days though. I'm talking off the bike, because usually you finish like the Giro or the Classics and you come home and you're like, right, I've got 5 days off.
There's not been much in terms of like mental rest, like physical rest. Like you have 3 days on, 1 day off.
Yeah,
training.
You have a rest day, but.
And I don't ride on rest days. No. That's like my thing. And that doesn't please my coach very much, but.
Yeah, sometimes you do, but not always.
Sometimes, yeah, if I feel like it. Yeah, there's just been a lot. There's like, I did the Classics, then straight into the Giro. Then after Giro, it was like straight into Nationals. Then after Nationals, it was straight into Olympics, and after Olympics it was straight back into Poland.
Yeah.
And then but there's not really been like, okay, I've had physical days off, but like mentally there's always been something.
Yeah.
I think the Olympics is what did that this year. So
it's
mentally it's been a tough year.
So we are counting down to off season, but it's funny because people always say, oh yeah, but off season's, I'm talking people from out of the cycling bubble, they always say, oh, but off season's coming up soon, so you'll have loads of time with Ryan. I honestly feel like off season gets shorter and shorter every year. Like,
last year it did because I went from China to Australia. So it'd be, I think this year.
How long did you have off the bike last year though?
2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks. So you raced all year.
A week of that was spent in Austria with the team.
And maybe we'll get a little, it depends on your program next year, I guess, which you won't get until later on this year. But it wouldn't be much more than that anyway, really, would it?
I mean, 3 is the norm.
Yeah.
Four is becoming more the norm, but anything less than 3 is like, that's not off season. That's like.
But you didn't really have an off season last year.
Not really, because I mean, straight away, we wanted to hit the ground running with Sam.
Yeah.
So I finished the season late with Tour of Guangxi in China.
Yeah.
By the time it had 2 weeks off, I was already thinking about having to get back on the bike to start training so I was fit for Australia. Yeah. Australia's a world tour race. You can't go there underdone.
No.
So you have to be ready.
Yeah.
So it was a case of like getting back on the bike a little bit earlier than I wanted to, and then starting harder work a little bit earlier than I wanted to.
Yeah.
So it was just,
So I think we've covered off the key things that have happened over the past busy 6 or so weeks.
Thanks a lot for listening, guys. And again, I'm sorry for how long it was since I've been on the show. And we'll make sure we have something juicy to talk about in the next episode. So make sure you tune to that one, and thanks again.
We'll send Ryan into nursery for another fight just so we have a topic of conversation for the next podcast. But thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for all the support over the last few weeks. And make sure you like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Your Swanya. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks guys. See you soon.